Okay, we have Cheryl. One of the things I've never actually breached for Cheryl is how to pronounce her middle name. Cheryl Nussbaum Beach has joined us from New York on a public holiday. Thanks very much, Cheryl. And Cheryl works in schools and has posted a post to her blog called The Art of Building Virtual Communities, which has drawn a lot of attention from around the edublogging world, and including the course that we're running here called Online Learning Communities. We've all looked at this blog post quite early on in the course, Cheryl, so it would be great to get a refresh, but as you know, this is a 10-minute lecture, so please don't hold back and talk us through the art of building virtual communities, and some of the points and considerations you've had since would be great. Once again, thanks very much, Cheryl, for joining us, and I'll hand the mic over to you to make further introductions if you like, and we can kick off the 10-minute lecture when you're ready.
So would you like for me to introduce myself and then do the lecture, or are we going to go down and have others introduce themselves as well?
Well, we can go down the list if you like. Let's start with Cheryl, has stepped out of the room. Dave, from memory, was on a Linux computer and difficulty getting a microphone on. So unless, Dave, you are ready to go, we might move to Graham to make introductions.
Oh, hello, this is Graham here from Dunedin. Nice to be speaking to you, Cheryl.
Hi, this is Joyce. I'm from EIT Hawke's Bay in New Zealand.
Hi, Cheryl. Linda Robertson here from Dunedin also.
Another Dunedinite here, William Lucas. Oh, God, up into the red. Sorry about that, folks.
Hi, this is Cheryl Greenfield. I think I've now got sound. Oh, it's in the red.
Thanks, Sarah. And Vida, could you make an introduction if you're still with us?
Hi, I'm Vida. Oops, a bit high on the microphone, and I'm from the Alexandra Community Learning Centre.
And for those not based in New Zealand, Alexandra is Central South Island, New Zealand. A lovely place. I think that was everyone. We had Randy making another attempt with the mic, and Dave, unfortunately, not able to join us because of Lunate not ready to run with Linux. Cheryl, over to you.
All right, excellent. I just wanted to tell everyone that what a pleasure it is meeting you, both those that were able to introduce themselves with their voice and those that talked a little in direct messaging. So it's very exciting. And also, Lee, I wanted to thank you for having me here tonight. I do a lot of work in Illuminate. I spend a lot of time with different projects that I'm involved in Illuminate, so I feel very comfortable here, and it's exciting to be with people from around the world. I had an opportunity to spend some time in New Zealand. In fact, I've done a couple things with New Zealand, so have a real passion for the people and the country and your children there. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the art of virtual learning communities and how you build those and how you're involved in them. But before I do so, I thought I would talk a little bit about me. My description is a little bit different than what you gave, Lee, and that's perfectly okay. I do wear several hats, so it's kind of hard to keep up with. But my jobs, as far as how I earn the legal tender, is I work for the College of William and Mary as an adjunct instructor. I teach graduate and undergraduate pre-service teachers, and the course that I teach is instructional technology. But we never teach technology within isolation, so it's really taught within the context of lots of different things that I do. I also am a digital learning consultant. I have an organization that I call 21st Century Collaborative. I do a lot of different consultings for different organizations, and all of the things that I do, whether it's at William & Mary or whether it's with the consulting business that I have, is all based around virtual communities. So I have a lot of opportunity to spend time in virtual communities and lots of different perspectives. So it helps to kind of give me a lot of variety to look at in the way that they can be organized. At William & Mary, I set up virtual learning communities with my pre-service teachers. In fact, Lee and I first met because he did a presentation for the pre-service teachers there at William & Mary. I also set them up in not only using Illuminate, but in a virtual community called Tapped In, where they're able to converse with mentors from around the world who come in and answer their just-in-time questions about things that they're concerned about or things that they're seeing in their field-based experiences. I also just finished up with William & Mary the second year of research with a project called INDAPT, and INDAPT is an acronym put together that has to do with building community with novice teachers. So once they've left the college environment, they're in their first year of teaching, and they're really having lots of questions that maybe a face-to-face mentor, if they're lucky enough to have one, isn't answering. They're able to get those kinds of answers from a group mentoring experience. So I've experienced in building community there. In the consulting business, I am doing several things. The Center for Teaching Quality is one of the organizations I work with, and right now we're in the process of actually building a virtual learning community platform that will support the work they do there. Part of the work they have is through the Teacher Leaders Network. And the Teacher Leaders Network is something that I've been involved in for the last 5 years. Absolutely fascinating. What I call my community, and it's where I get fed and spend my time learning and growing as well as the web. I also am involved in a learning project in Alabama, and so it's the third year that I've spent in the work that I'm doing in Alabama around 21st century teaching and learning skills, and all of that's being delivered while I'm in Virginia Beach. I'm not in New York, I'm in Virginia Beach, and so all of that's being delivered while I'm in Virginia Beach through virtual means. We have several types of tools that we're using to develop community there. There's some work that I do with SchoolNet. They're getting ready to develop something called GlobalNet, which will be an international learning community built around data, which should be pretty interesting. So as you can see, there's a lot of different things that I do. Last but certainly not least, I am a mom. I have four incredible kids, and now that they're all out and in college or on their own, we use Web 2.0 tools quite a bit to keep the community of our family alive. And then, of course, I'm an educational blogger. Any of you that know about K-12 Online, I have an opportunity to be one of the conveners for that. And that's a virtual community of practice that collaborates around a conference that's by teachers for teachers. I also am a guest blogger at Tech Learning and EduStat. So there's a little bit about my life. I'm passionate about riding bikes and live on the ocean. So that's the reason for this slide. So nice to meet everybody. And now you know a little bit about why I love community and why I kind of talk about it a lot and think about it a lot, because I really see virtual learning communities as the answer for true educational reform. I think it's really where we're going to be going. I think more than ever you're going to see professional learning environments built around communities, virtual learning communities, and communities of practice. I believe that you're going to see virtual communities of practice be the way that people just collaborate together and get to know each other globally around ideas like my daughter, for instance, is really into crafts, and she is involved in lots of communities that have to do with that. And I think that we're going to see collaboration through community really become very, very important. Yes, pedal powered, William. I ride both. Actually, my favorite bike right now is what I call the Stretch. It's a tandem bike, a bicycle built for two. Hey, V, glad to see that you've joined us. So let's start our discussion about how to build virtual learning communities with a definition. And I'm not going to read to you, so you can just kind of look at the definitions that I have there. But basically, virtual learning communities are where you have individuals that are engaged by influencing each other within a learning process. There's relationships that are developed, usually because we're talking about virtual, through non-traditional means. We come together through our blogs in the blogosphere or through a course where we take and we have either asynchronous and synchronous opportunities to engage each other. Typically, virtual learning communities are non-mediated language, that there's lots of discourse that goes on, but it's not structured in such a way like a class would be. Communities of practice are interactive. They're loosely structured. They typically have relationships that are built on trust, And there's usually an ebb and flow in conversations and also in roles that the members of the community of practice play. You know, sometimes in a community of practice, I might just be kind of hanging on the edges, sort of lurking or still reading, maybe sometimes not even as engaged as lurking. And then other times I might be right in the center of things, really leading the conversation and very engaged and interested in what's going on. The term community of practice, of course, was first used by Etienne Wenger and Jean Lay. They kind of used it to define it. And basically, Etienne's, I always mispronounce his name and I apologize for that, his definition is that communities of practice are groups of people who share a passion for something that they know how to do and who interact regularly in learning how to do it better. And I love that. I think that's very good. Yeah, how do you pronounce that? I'm going to let you tell me. How do you pronounce it? Is it Etienne? Etienne? Is that right? I always get it wrong because I typically read it and don't hear it said very often. But when I do hear people say it, I always go, gosh, I got to learn to say it. So I do apologize for botching that up pretty bad. All right. My name, you said it exactly right, Lee. My name is Nussbaum Beach. It's actually Nussbaum Beach. It is German for nut tree, the way somebody said earlier. I lived in South Georgia, and they pretty much changed it, and so it became Nussbaum Beach. Nussbaum was someone who I was, my husband that I was married to, and he died, and then I remarried and married Beach. And so I hyphenated the name because I have children from both. So. Yeah, it's like Nut Tree Beach. It's very interesting because when I call on the phone, most people think I'm Cheryl from West Palm Beach. And the interesting thing about that is that I had never met my father. And then finally I did meet my father, and guess where he was from? West Palm Beach. So I really am Cheryl from West Palm Beach. The name causes a lot of confusion, but anyway, it makes things worse. I'm not from New York. I'm from Virginia Beach. So there you go. It's all in a name, right? You know, there's a growing number of people that are tracking trends in society, and basically the trends that we, societal trends that we see out there are shaping, or at least they should shape, the future of education. I think that, in my personal opinion, there's nowhere that the trends that people are looking at today have a greater impact than in our schools or in our classrooms. And I think that as we prepare our students, you know, not for the past or the present, but for their future, we really need to take into consideration some of these trends. Now, and this, the report that I looked at that I'm going to be talking about for the next couple minutes is 10 Trends for Educating Children for Tomorrow's World. And it's by Gary Marks, president for the Center for Public Outreach. And there's only a couple trends here that I'm going to talk about, but I think that they really point to the importance of starting to think about virtual learning communities or communities of practice within the classroom, both for teachers in their own professional development or their personal learning networks, or, well, this is interesting, Bea, and as I talk about them, you can weigh in on that and see what you think. But I think that you'll see what I mean as you listen to the trends. As I looked at this report and I read them, it was very interesting because a lot of it were things that have been said in the blogosphere for quite some time. And then when I looked at Gary's list of references, I didn't see anybody I knew, which I thought was interesting. But trend one is basically that social and intellectual capital are the new economic values in the world economy. You know, an economy that's driven by technology and information, we're going to see that there's a dramatic increase of the level of knowledge that's needed to function. You know, so that we talk about that children today are going to need some level of media or digital literacy in order to be able to be a functional member in the 21st century. And also the level of knowledge. You know, it used to be that kids could, if you had a college education, you were pretty much guaranteed a job. And then it's kind of gone to now where you have to have more than just a bachelor's degree. It has to go the next level up. Well, basically, in an economy based on social and intellectual capital, what you know and who you know both count. And this is where the virtual learning communities come in, is that because of the ability to network and be able to connect with each other and to be able to engage each other around the world, it's really going to be the power of collective intelligence where none of us are as good as all of us. And so that social intellectual capital is going to be something that we really are going to need as educators to be able to utilize to stay connected. You know, just like being able to connect with some of the people that are here in this room and being able to learn by reading your blogs or listening to the presentations that you do. I know when I listened to Conrad's presentation, recording of his from the other day, you know, I grew as an educator just from listening to that. And I think learning communities are really going to help keep educators informed so that by talking to each other and we can keep up with whatever the trends are from that are naturally emerging or ones that even some educators are might be fabricating or we might be getting from the echo chamber, but at least we can push back and ask those questions and talk to each other instead of being in the isolation of our classrooms, confined by those four walls. I think learning communities are going to be very important in benefiting from each other's capital, intellectual capital. I think that teachers are going to also need to model for their students and then help them create their own learning communities so that they can develop a network of content experts, and that this whole idea of social and intellectual capital is going to be something that's going to bring learning communities to the forefront once we get into, you know, take them into the classroom. Trend 7 said that technology will increase the speed of communication and the pace of advancement or decline. I've seen this in my own personal life, and I think many of you probably have as well, that those who have the technology and know how to use it really are moving forward very quickly. A lot of times it's because of the pace of the communication, and so that we're able to collaborate and connect in ways that are very important. In fact, Howard Rheingold's book, I don't know if you've read his new one, Smart Mobs, but in there, one of the things that jumped out to me was about the new digital divide. And, you know, when we think about the digital divide, often we think about the digital divide in terms of those who have technology and those who don't. And there's, you know, that's something that's I'm very passionate about. I do a lot of work and speak and do presentations around homelessness and children of poverty and things of that nature. And so it's something that is very near and dear to my heart. But what Howard says, and I thought this was very interesting, is that the new digital divide will really be between those who know how to band together and collaborate online and those who do not. And I think that has a direct implication as far as learning communities go. You know, I think it's going to be that teachers will really become partners with their students, that we'll start using the learning communities in such a way that it'll be intergenerational and that we'll be interacting not only with great diversity, with a global perspective with people all around the world, that our classrooms will truly become the learning landscapes that we want them to be, that where it's more of an ecology effort, because by using the learning communities, it won't be this top-down thing. It'll be that we're all getting and learning from people in all different age ranges and all different diverse places in the world. And, you know, that's interesting, too, the perspective of maybe it will create a new class system. You know, the digital divide between those who can use technology to collaborate online and those who can't. Very interesting. You know, I think that this report's worth checking out. I don't know that a lot of it will look very familiar to you. There are other trends in the report that talk about the change in demographics, the change in economy. It's very U.S. perspective report because it's done by a United States company, but a lot of the perspectives in there, I think that you'll find that the trends really do point to classrooms becoming more of a learning ecology. And that was pretty exciting for me. I think that that it was very exciting, actually, as I read through the trends and I saw a confirmation of being able to bring the aspect of using the tools that build community in the classroom and really changing, making principal changes in the whole way that we deliver curriculum. I'm going to stop for just a minute and give you an opportunity to discuss that before we move on to actually discussing the article a little bit. What questions or comments do you have before we move forward? Lindar?
Yeah, hi, Cheryl. I noticed one comment you made at the beginning, and I was really interested. You said something, here, I've lost the plot now. It was a query about when you talked about communities of practice, and you talked about a kind of equality within the community and people participating equally, etc. And I wondered about whether things that were courses, like we're on a course at the moment, for instance, whether that truly could ever be a community of practice, because we're students and we're being assessed, and it seems like a whole different thing in some ways. And I just wondered if you could comment on that. They seem like two different things. One's a voluntary community where you contribute to because you're interested in whatever other people are interested in, versus you're there because you're on a course. Oops.
That's a great question. Communities, virtual learning communities and communities of practice, and the terms tend to overlap each other, and there are diverse opinions. For me, though, basically the definition that I go by is that it's a group of people that come together to really discuss and to that are interested in like-minded things, and they kind of talk about them. They might have diverse opinions and ideas about that, but they push it. I think that a community of practice can develop within a course, but the true test is that if that community continues after the course. In other words, I think communities of practice, you can have a course that doesn't have community. It's strictly a virtual learning environment where people come together and they come together and they talk about things. And then you can also have a community of practice that really continues on, you know, virtual learning community where people, like our blogs where we're in the blogosphere and we're talking, or like the Teacher Leaders Network, which has been going on, you know, for 4 years, the community that I belong in. So I think that to answer your question is that you can have community within a course. But I think that the real test of time is what determines whether it's truly a community of practice that continues on. I know that I only have just a couple more minutes, so I just wanted to talk about these slides real quick, and then we'll go from there. I know it's supposed to be a 10-minute lecture. I'm listening to the other ones. I saw some people got away with 15, 20 minutes, and I hope you'll let me, you know, since we're engaging as we go through, you guys will give me some grace and let me go through that, since it's taking longer than I had expected. Basically, the article that Lee talked about, I actually pointed to some models of some other people. And the first one that I wanted to talk about was one that was inspired by an interview that was done by John Seely Brown. Marsha Connors did the interview for Linezine. And basically, this one talked about thinking in terms of a 4L model, where you have communities of practice, and in the middle, in the very center, you have leaders. That would be like your community organizer or your moderator. The next circle out would be the learning, and those are people who are really engaged in the conversation. People that are in that learning center are the ones who really they're helping to lead it. They might be the community organizer. They have a real commitment to the community. They contribute on a consistent basis, and basically their job is to try to build fires and make the conversation so exciting that they pull more people into the center. And then the next one out, the green one, is the lurking area. And a lot of people have a problem with lurkers when communities first get started, because I've noticed, especially in academic areas, they think that lurking doesn't equate giving to the community, or it doesn't include learning, and that's not true at all. Lurking can be it's the place where usually you have the largest number of people. Winger really calls it a legitimate peripheral participants. They might be interested in greater involvement. In fact, when the conversation shifts to things they're involved in, they might be more participatory, and then at other times they might just lurk. It also might be that it's a particular busy time for them, and so it might be that, you know, they are lurking where later they will be learning, depending on what the conversation is. And then the most outer circle is the linking, and these are people who actually find the community. They may have even bookmarked it or RSS it, but they might not read on a regular basis, or they might not, they're just basically testing and want to give it more time to see if it's really something that's going to be of value and value added for them and their own aspect. Now, this is from somebody that many of you probably know pretty well. This is Derek Winmoth, and I had an opportunity to meet Derek and work with him a little bit. Derek and I both keynoted the virtual online conference that New Zealand gave. We were the keynoters for that. And then we also had an opportunity to meet and kind of hang out together a little bit when I was in New Zealand with the Two Anns conference. I did a series of keynotes with Two Anns while I was in New Zealand. And basically, this is his model, and he bases it on, like the other gentleman had four L's, he bases his on four C's. And his online community really looks at how a community develops around blogs specifically, and not looking at walled, because community can take in a walled garden, it can take in a something like Ning, or where you use that platform. If you don't know Ning, it's a collaborative platform that allows blogging and has sort of like a shared space you can go into, but then it's still searchable. You can have online communities that occur in places like TapedIn, or you can have a community that's built strictly in using the participatory media that we all communicate with each other. But yeah, B is right that learning communities really do develop their culture as they go. There's patterns that develop, and I think that that, you know, over time that can even change depending on the new people that come to the community and what they bring to it. So there could even be a change of the actual culture, and that causes some people to leave and some people to come in. Anyway, Derek's phases are the first level that he has, if we're starting on the left, is consumer, and basically those are his lurkers. That's where they explore, and they're not really passive. They're very active, but they're just not visible. And then the commenter to Derek is where people are making comments on posts and discussion forums or on blogs. They're kind of agreeing with a statement here or making a suggestion, but it's not really they're just basically commenting, and it's not really where they're making a synthesis of what's being said. Then if you look at his next level, that's contributor. And as the label suggests, that's basically people have started their own blogs, they initiate new threads, they're confident, and they put forth their own ideas, and they really are establishing a place in the Edge's blogosphere. And then you have a commenter and a commentator. And the commentator basically is somebody who really takes a meta view of what's going on. They synthesize, they analyze, they try to draw the big picture based on what they're reading, and it's very evident that they're actually doing a lot of reading and a lot of analyzing in their post and what they're talking about. There's different kinds of communities, as you've been talking about in the direct messaging window, and it really depends on both the environment, the place where the community is built, and also the type of community, and based on what the outcomes or the goals of the community are. For instance, a virtual learning community of relationship is one that really is built on trust and relationships and commitment, and that people kind of know ahead of time what the values of the community are. They are able to work together in that way. And that's like the Teacher Leaders Network that I belong to. There's also communities of place. Some of you are very familiar with Second Life, and that's a community of place where people they are building a community around enjoying the environment where they are. I don't know how many of you play WoW. I'm a WoWer, and World of Warcraft is like that, MySpace. So it's a group of people that really we kind of connect with each other because of place. And then there's virtual communities of passion. And I think that this is something, and I wrote this in the article, that you're going to see more and more of it, communities of passion, because Ted Reingold talked a little bit about in a presentation I watched of his, where he really feels that even cell phones and PDAs and different kinds of things are going to bring these community people together, and that it won't be web-based anymore. And it could be around something, you know, like winemaking or crafting, or it could be like a search for the truth, you know, true academics working together. But it'll be people that are passionate about what they're discussing. And then there's also virtual communities of memory, you know, like people that have been through an event together, like Holocaust survivors, or people that have a certain illness and, you know, they're remembering their loved ones, or you might have 9/11 survivors, things of that nature, where people, it's based on a common sense of history. It's an event that they've been through together, and because of that, they collaborate and can, you know, and their whole community is built around that. Now, the way that I was going to end the presentation was with what makes a healthy community, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave this slide up and instead just go ahead and turn the microphone over now to questions, because I know you read about what makes a healthy community in the article itself, and we can discuss those just through your questions as we go through. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions, discussion, comments.